Blog Talk Radio.
It's the V-Spot. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Tater. My co-host is Bill Foster. V-Spot Radio is brought to you by Planet Vic Tater Blog Network. Get everything you need and a few things you truly do not want. Only at Planet Vic Tater. Okay, we're on the air. That jerkwad Bill's asleep, so it's just going to be me and hopefully Eric calling in. We're going to be talking about some X-Men. Tomorrow morning we got a big show. I'll be talking to J.M. DeMatteis, the writer of Kraven's Last Hunt and a bunch of really awesome Captain America comics. Right now I'm going to be waiting for Eric to come in. Hopefully in November we're going to start the final part of Horsepower Season 1 and Cosmic Forces will finally start. That is dependent upon Neil getting off his ass, which, so it's probably not going to happen. Lots of stuff in the news. Eric's going to call in. We were talking about X-Men earlier today, and I thought I'd need a little bit of a tune-up show because I hadn't done a show in about 2 weeks. We'll be talking about mainly the Essential X-Men runs. Okay, here he is. Eric.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hey, Victor.
Hey. So anyway, you said this started today because we've been planning on doing an X-Men show for a while, but things have been a little jumbled up. So you said you're going through your Essential X-Men volumes again?
Yeah, because, you know, it's funny, just, I got the Marvel book. The Untold Tales Marvel book, whatever it's called, that I got a couple days ago. And after reading it, it made me want to read some of these Claremont Essentials again. Because...
All right. What was your impression of Volume 1?
Actually, I didn't read Volume 1.
Are you reading Volume 1? Huh?
What?
All right, have you reread Volume 1 or are you just reading Volume 2?
I never got Volume 1.
Oh, okay. You need to try to get it. My impression of it was kind of odd in places because they're still trying to find a tone for the books. In general, like, there was this weird story where Wolverine is saved by leprechauns, and leprechauns are the ones who knew his real name.
Yeah, how much was Wolverine in that first volume? Because, like, you always hear, like, he didn't become a breakout character, you know, until, like, about around Volume 2 time.
He was in the comic at the time. The thing was, Claremont and Dave Cockrum hated him.
Yeah.
And
you can tell from Giant Size X-Men 1, he wasn't so, like... They basically had three angry people in Giant Size X-Men 1, Wolverine, some Thunderbird, and Sunfire, and they didn't really stick out, any of them.
Yeah, did you hear the story about Thunderbird that Chris Claremont always hated the fact that he was forced to kill Thunderbird off?
Yeah, he was? Do you think so?
Yeah, Lynn Lyon had every intention of killing him.
Yeah.
While he was still doing the book, and Lynn Lyon left the series because he had to choose between Hulk and X-Men, and he figured, you know, he'd been on Hulk a lot longer, and he enjoyed working on it more, so he passed off Claremont, but... As an editor, he said, you have to kill off Thunderbird because he's basically created to die.
Yeah.
And
so he's never come back. He's the only X-Men that's never come back, and except for maybe the Changeling or more.
Well, they brought his brother back. They brought his brother as a new mutant villain, as Warpath.
Warpath, yeah.
John Byrne told a story, and the thing about John Byrne is he is kind of prickly on his forum, but if you avoid his hot spots, things are going to set him off. He actually tells really good stories about working in comics. He's kind of like your grandpa, though. You know things that are going to set your grandpa off, so you just avoid it?
Yeah.
That's kind of how Byrne is. But he told a story about how Claremont was going to introduce, when Kitty Pryde was created, Claremont wanted to name her Thunderbird. And John Byrne fought against this because he said, that doesn't make any sense. You know, because we're powers, you know, it just wouldn't make any sense to do that.
I also don't get why they had Sunfire who's just going to run away in the next, fly away next issue.
Well, I think it made sense to include Sunfire because the way the story was set up is that it was basically, you remember Samurai Pizza Cat, how they had the Rescue Pizza Cat?
Yeah.
These were kind of like the Rescue X-Men, you know, like Xavier's going through the phone book, trying to find any mutants he couldn't convince to join before. I mean, I don't even think he knew Wolverine was a mutant, so it's like, hey, he kind of looks like a mutant. So he's just gathering this very, you know, he's just grabbing anybody that he can as a fresh body, which they did a retcon a couple of years ago saying
that.
Yeah,
let's not talk about that. Yeah.
To me, that makes Xavier a monster. You know, you've had enough time to gather a second team and had them get killed. You know, maybe it's time to go find the Avengers.
They should keep on reconning that until saying that Xavier kept getting more and more mutant teams who would just get killed, return to rescue them, and they keep on doing it over and over again, not telling anyone what happened, what's happening. Like,
yeah, just have all these.
Cyclops is like, hey, you want to call the Avengers yet? We've pretty much killed four mutant teams so far. I don't feel like calling the Avengers. Let's get some more people. Let's get some more mutants.
And we're kind of wearing out on, and we're kind of running out of useful powers. I mean, that one kid can only talk to flies.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how he got Sunfire to join him. Look, Sunfire, I know you don't like me, but I've killed 30 kids today. It's wearing on me. I need somebody with a useful power.
Yeah.
Please,
that's
please.
Right. He had to beg Banshee join also, and Banshee is basically a middle-aged Irish dude who doesn't want to be a superhero.
Yeah, it's like, you know, because if you look at those early appearances, you know, in X-Men, he wasn't ever really keen on doing it. So, you know, I'm guessing that he had to give these stories to every one of these guys to get them to join.
I just feel like the idea that Banshee has always basically been an old dude, not someone like Wolverine who has a healing factor or has been alive 100 years. Banshee has just always been an old middle-aged dude who doesn't really want to fight, be a superhero.
Yeah, you just feel like he's been through some stuff. And, you know, it also makes sense if you consider the fact that he probably talked to Thunderbird once before, and he's like, fuck it, that kid ain't joining my team. I don't think I can stay the plane ride back with him.
Yeah.
And it's like, Xavier, the Caterpillar kid, got killed. I guess I'll go talk to the Thunderbird kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the thing is, you know, it's funny because Cal Nefaria is the one that killed Thunderbird, and he showed up in Avengers later with superpowers. And I always wanted Cal Nefaria to show back up in X-Men. You know, he's got the Silver Age Superman powers and really bust some heads.
Yeah.
But he
never really the biggest X-Men villain, is he? Count before, yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't that big of a... Well, he was kind of a minor league villain. It was interesting Jim Shooter thought to take him and give him that big upgrade. Because he was not that big a villain. Like, he got his ass kicked by the Avengers once or twice when he didn't have powers. And then he gathered this team of, like, third stringers to fight the original X-Men. And, you know, and they're struggling against the original X-Men. If I was counting for you, I'd have canceled that. Because if you're struggling against the X-Men, what the hell are the Avengers going to do to you?
Yes. I'm noticing reading Volume 2 that our recurring theme seems to be, I mean, besides the Bondage recurring theme that you get with Chris Claremont anyway, but another recurring theme is that people, they ask people to join the X-Men, and then they all say no. They ask Dazzler to join the X-Men, and she's like, no, I have a series coming up. They ask multiple men to join the X-Men. He's like, no, I like hanging out in the lab and more McTaggart and Muir Island. They ask Alex and Lorna, they're like, no, I don't want to turn again. One day, me, Lorna, and multiple men are going to be written by Peter David and will be entertaining.
Yeah, it's one of those things, all these characters, you know, they don't want to join. Oh, yeah, Havoc left it. Havoc's actually one of my favorite characters in the X-Men.
I only like him where he's wearing that suit, where he's wearing his best outfit.
One of the things I like about Havoc is that he has, I always thought it was interesting, he had powers that could only kill. Like, it's not like how Cyclops can lower the beams. It's like, you know, if Havoc uses those powers on a living thing, they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I always wondered how it would be if you actually had eye beams and you killed somebody and the cops showed up and go, what do you think, I shot lasers out of my eyes? That's ridiculous. People can't do that. And they go, yeah, I guess you're right, but what killed this guy? I don't know.
And then you have the Claremont who's like, I love you, and I, you.
Yeah, the thing about Claremont that I learned was that he tends to only be as good as the artist he's with, and I don't mean that he's like the artist carrying the stories, but I think he needs somebody that is good at collaborating with him. Because you can tell he really feeds off guys that he has good chemistry with.
Yeah.
Did the book mention the fact that Claremont hated Romita Jr.?
Wait, say it again?
Claremont hated Romita Jr.
I didn't really point that out, no.
Okay, well, he didn't want Romita Jr. on book, and we're skipping a little bit ahead here, but Paul Smith had left the book, and they had Romita Jr., and he just did not have any type of chemistry with him, and that's like the low point of the book, and I think that's just because they weren't clicking at all. And apparently at a convention, Chris Claremont said he would love to have Paul Smith back on the book, and Romita Jr. said, Chris, I'm sitting right here.
Yeah.
And a very, very awkward moment. And after that is when Mark Silverstein came on, and Mark Silverstein had a really underrated run on the book as artist.
Yeah.
He would probably be my number two.
I actually think that seeing the Marvel book I read, it talked about Chris, of course, Claremont, you know, has tried so long to write every X-Men spin-off that Marvel would make, and I think Chris Claremontisms and his weirdness of dialogue comes out more apparent, like when he came back, when we're used to X-Men, you know, written in different ways, whether that's better or worse than Claremont, that's your opinion, but like, it, you know, reading other people's X-Men and then reading Claremont come back 2000, his Claremontisms seem like more obvious than usual.
Yeah, you notice some of the things more. When he came back to X-Men, I didn't read it too long because I know a lot of people don't like the run. I thought it had some good points to it, like the story when Senator Kelly was killed.
Yeah, I was seeing that in Senator Kelly and Moira.
Yeah, I thought those were pretty strong stories, and I thought he did a good job writing Cable for a character he didn't really create.
Yes.
Well, he did create Cable, but not really.
Yeah, I know. And he made Rogue Leader, which sort of makes sense a little down.
Yeah, one of the things when you go into Volume 3 is because Volume 2 is like a very strong volume of Essential X-Men, because that's when you have the Dark Phoenix stuff, the Hellfire Club.
Yeah, I think it's probably their best volume they can have in the history of X-Men comics.
Yeah, and there's so much stuff going on in there, and it works so well. Volume 3 felt like it was a drop somewhat, and I think it's because when Byrne left, that Claremont was, it was almost like it had a new writer, because you could tell he was trying to get re-acclimated to the cast.
Yes.
There was a funny story where, you know, they did the retcon of Magneto being a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
And Byrne said that back in the old days, Claremont would read out the scripts to him, and he would do Magneto like this. You know, kind of a Wicked Witch voice. And he asked him after the Holocaust retcon, so does Magneto still talk like that?
That's another thing that I really think that besides, you know, the Lee Kirby and Ditko, that, you know, the X-Men movies, that the people that deserve the most money from the Marvel movies is probably Chris Claremont.
Yeah, it really is. And also, you know, it's like it's shameful how Marvel treated Dave Cockrum.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, and people say, well, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, I'm a hobo. You know, I mean, I'm a hobo, but if I made that much money off somebody, you know, I'd give them at least a percentage of a percentage. I'm pretty sure if you give Claremont the money they made off Wolverine lollipops, or, you know, Nightcrawler products or something. I'm pretty sure he'd been set for life. He was getting a royalty near the end.
Yeah, they should always have Chris Claremont writing some X-Men comic, even if no one's reading
it. I think another thing was with Claremont not wanting other people to write the books, though. I think he was probably concerned about quality control. Because I don't know if you've ever read X-Men The Untold Story, where they did an alternate, they showed the alternate What If Phoenix Had Lived.
Yeah.
And this was written by Claremont, and the writing on it was brutal. You know, it's like they were trying to ape Claremont, and it's hard to, the thing about Claremont is he's the only person that can pull his stuff off. If anybody else tries to do it, it falls apart. You know, which that's a testament to him as a writer. But that was one of those things. So I'm guessing it was probably a quality control issue, and also probably doing the bringing back X Factor. You know, I think he said in an interview that it was. He said the way they did it was they didn't even approach him about writing it, or they didn't tell him, you know, heads up, we're going to do this. We're going to do this, and he said he took it as an insult.
Yes, he almost quit unless he got to calm down before he called them and error in the book.
Did the book mention the fact that he would actually pay, he would actually give a part of his money to the inkers and the colorists?
No, I don't think it, no.
Yeah, he would do that. He would actually pick out the colorists for the book because he wanted to make sure it had a certain quality, so he would take a portion of his money and pay them extra.
Oh, cool.
Even if they didn't get royalties because he felt like that they were contributing to the book.
It's actually ironic when you think of the ink here, because I haven't actually read seen the ink, because they're maybe not incidentals, but never mind.
One of the things was, Volume 4 had the Brood introduced.
Yeah.
That's when the Brood showed up, and they had those were really, it's amazing how between Volume 3 and Volume 4, something finally clicked again with Claremont, and I think it was probably having the Brood story, something re-energized him. And they also did that story with Colossus God was fighting the Brotherhood, and Pyro hit him with the intense flames, and Avalanche hit him with the cold.
And
so
then
it made his armor all cracked.
He turned to a statue or something?
Yeah, it's like his armor was all cracked and
bent.
Yeah,
you know something? That's actually one of the first X-Men stories I read. After watching the X-Men cartoon, I got an issue of Classic X-Men, and it was an issue like right after that.
Yeah, I would get Classic X-Men sometimes. I remember when I was a kid, I saw an issue of Classic X-Men when Juggernaut was fighting Colossus in a bar, and he mentioned the fact that he had fought Spider-Man, and I kept saying, now I want to read that Spider-Man story. And it took me about 16 years, and I finally read it, and it lived up to the wait. I used to own a copy of X-Men 13. Like, I used to own the Silver Age copies of the first appearance of Juggernaut, because I got them cheap because they were damaged. They were kind of damaged. They weren't in pristine condition. I wish I'd held on to them.
Yeah. That's funny. As a kid, I didn't actually know who Chris Claremont was for a few minutes, for like a while, obviously, since I got next one from the X-Men cartoon, and the comics at the time didn't actually, Chris Claremont was obviously gone already, but so I didn't actually know who he is until, like, I don't know when.
Oh, one of the things I found funny about Marvel, you know, like, I think the biggest, like, blunder Marvel ever made was is when they got rid of Claremont in favor of Jim Lee.
Yeah.
And, you know, I basically said it was like you killed the Golden Goose in favor of its latest egg. You know, I don't want to say that he made these artists, but, you know, he could have found them another Jim Lee. You know, and I think Jim Lee's problem was he didn't like the fact that Claremont kept creating new stuff instead of just reusing the Sentinels again or Magneto. He liked to, you know, try to find new shit to write. And it's like nobody quite got the fact that is why X-Men was staying popular.
Yes.
But he was also really good...
Yes, Claremont always writes good Magneto.
Yeah, he did a good job of keeping new villains coming in, because he went from the Brotherhood to bring in the Marauders and Mr. Sinister, and then was able to bring in the Reavers.
Yeah. I didn't really read the X-Men Australia era. What do you think of that? Because I kind of have a feeling that's partially why Chris Claremont was kicked out.
I actually really love the Australia era. I thought it was really effective.
I know, I never read that, but people have mixed opinions about that era.
Yeah, I mean, what I liked about it is that the fact that there was X Factor actually helped, because with this lineup, if you didn't have some fix for Cyclops in the original X-Men, you'd be like, why the hell is Longshot on the team? But instead, you know, it's fun because, you know, you have two distinct teams that also got to put Havoc in the spotlight.
Yeah, but I could see why the people at Marvel were like, hey, they're all hanging around in the Australian Outback for like a year or something, and now they're all around the country and they're all lost or something.
Yeah, and that seemed to end really fast. I don't know what was going on, but then it went into the Extinction Agenda, which I wrote a blog post about that, a review of the latest X-Men volume, and I really did not care for Extinction Agenda.
Yeah.
I just could not buy Cameron Hodges being a big bad on that level.
I like the cartoon episode better.
Yeah, it's like, I can't remember. I think he might have been in one cartoon. I haven't watched the cartoon in years. I'm getting ready to watch it.
Yeah, we know their show just for the cartoon.
Yeah, the cartoon, you know, and people don't really understand, you know, like, people can, you know, bash in for certain things, you know, but the fact that they were doing a show like that at the time was really amazing compared to other stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
just
because it came out at the same time as Batman, which obviously had a better budget and better animation and better voice actors. You know, I like the X-Men voice actors, but still, there's not a lot. Even now, there's never been really a Marvel cartoon like the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah, I think now with Avengers, it's getting pretty close. Like, Avengers, I feel like, is more of a streamlined version of what the X-Men cartoon was.
Yes.
The thing about the X-Men cartoon was that I feel like it really did capture the X-Men comics of the time, post-Claremont. Which, I'm not sure how long I'm going to stick with the Essentials once they get into the post-Claremont era. Did you ever read any of Avengers, X-Men Forever?
I don't think I did, no.
Okay, that was the series Claremont did where he basically got to take the series
as
if he had never left. And it was a pretty strong run. Like, he did something with Fabian Cortez. Like, he gave Fabian Cortez a different set of powers.
Yeah.
That he ended up having, where he was actually really tough, and they ended up not, basically, Cable was not Cyclops' son anymore.
And he killed Wolverine.
He killed Wolverine the first issue, and Sabretooth was there. Sabretooth had his eye basically burned off by Storm. Which I never really got around to finishing it because he's kind of getting a pain in the ass to find. But Sabretooth was one of my favorite characters. Like, there was a point when he was going down to the kitchen and he poured himself some cereal and he ate cereal with beer. And he had this line where he was telling Xavier where he said, yeah, you know, he said, that's the thing about people like us, Charlie. People like me, people are as fear. People like you, they hate.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
Chris
they actually made it. Yeah.
Maybe he hasn't been in the comics in a long time, I don't think. I mean, he used to be in there all the time in the 90s where he lived there for a few years. And then that was a weird era in the 90s where, just with the peak of the X-Men cartoon, they had Wolverine leave the books for 2 years, which I don't really get why, especially since I think that's the only time he's done that since he joined the X-Men in 1974-5.
Yeah, they ended up making Sabretooth be Wolverine's dad, and it kind of reminds me of that Simpsons thing. Wait, I thought Sabretooth was Wolverine's dad, and that made more sense.
Yes, that was a rumor. Was that close to joke? Because I remember like hearing that in the playground, like a rumor.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, basically.
Yeah, I
can
hear Sabretooth is Wolverine's dad.
Yeah, Claremont and Byrne both said that was the plan. Sabretooth started off light as Chris Claremont drawing what Wolverine looked like without his mask. And basically they said that Dave Cockrum had already done it, so they went ahead and used him as a villain in Iron Fist.
Yeah, Iron Fist.
Yeah, but it's funny because Sabretooth had that period in the mid-80s before he became the leader of the Marauders, where he was kind of working as a C-list Spider-Man jobber.
Yes. And in the 90s, he was all over the place living. He was Sieg Xavier's treatment for his killing and stuff, forever. And the X-Men would all go down to visit him and beat him up every once in a while, and he would say vaguely threatening things like, "Hey, Rogue, Gambit has a secret." Hey, Jean.
Oh, my God, if Gambit didn't have a secret, it's like...
weird in you.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things, he's like this. Gambit has a secret? I don't know, I'm just assuming. It's like, too late, I've already planted the seed of doubt. I really love the issue when he left the Xavier school, where he ended up telling Xavier, he said, "See, that's the difference between me and Wolverine. He wants to be different. I don't." And then he ended up tearing your shit up.
Yeah, the other day I found an issue from 95 when Sabretooth escaped. Oh, he escaped Xavier, and then they track him down. The original five X-Men.
Yeah, that was one when he tore it when he nearly killed Psylocke. Which, you know, we've only got like 2 minutes left, but you know, Psylocke has such a strange history.
Definitely.
She started off as Captain Britain's sister. She got her eyes gouged out, or something, in one of those comics. And then later, she ended up joining the X-Men. And then when she went through the Siege Perilous, she got trained to be a ninja. Which I was following it at that point, but eventually, after Claremont was gone, I believe that's when they added the other Psylocke and completely confused the issue. Actually, those issues with Psylocke and the Mandarin are one of my favorite Mandarin stories.
I never really got into Psylocke. She confused me too much as a kid.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It wasn't confusing. It wasn't really confusing until after Claremont left, and they kind of shit the bed.
Yeah,
I remember Claremont.
Like, I subscribed to the X-Men then, and I was like, "Oh, another Psylocke issue that's in the mail." Talking about Japan and this Psylocke and that Psylocke, it's all confusing.
I remember there was this interview Claremont did, and he was telling up the X-Men. He said, this was like in 1995, he said, "You know, I look at X-Men and I think that's half of my adult life, and Marvel gutted it like a fish in 18 months." So, he did later come back. I liked one of the things he did with Wolverine, where instead of giving Wolverine the adamantium back, he gave it to Sabretooth.
Yeah.
Which I actually thought that was a really good idea, and his logic for it was solid. Where he said, you know, that if Sabretooth has the adamantium, then you know, it makes Wolverine fighting him even more dangerous, because before, it would seem like the Wolverine was unkillable. Because you think, oh, well, he's got his adamantium, he's okay. Eric, hold on 1 second. We're going to go into streaming. I mean, is streaming going to end? Okay, we're all recording now.
All right, cool.
Another thing they wanted to do, have you ever read those Captain Britain comics by Alan Moore?
No.
And Alan Davis? Really, those are really worth reading. Like, that's some of my favorite Alan Moore superhero work. Because he really wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel. It was just doing, you know, good, solid superhero comics. And he introduced the Fury. And that was actually going to be the thing that they used in Fall of the Mutants instead of the Marauders. No, wait, Mutant Massacre, that's it. Mutant Massacre. But, yeah, if you get those later volumes, Mutant Massacre, Fall of the Mutants, those were both really good crossovers.
Yeah.
Which,
Talbot
I always liked
with
it.
Excalibur was a weird book. I mean, next and spin-off, but also had all that British Captain Britain stuff, like...
Yeah, I found most of that stuff. It's good stuff mostly. I know there was a point when Alan Davis was pissed off at Alan Moore because he didn't sign off on doing the reprints in the 80s because he's pissed off at Marvel for keeping the Marvel Man name. As far as I know. All right, Eric, I guess I'm going to go ahead and I guess we'll go ahead and finish up. In the morning at 10 a.m. Central Time, I'm going to be talking to J.M. DeMatteis. He wrote Kraven's Last Hunt. He's wrote a ton of Spider-Man comics, a bunch of Captain America comics, like a great writer all around. So if you're up early, tune in, listen to it, or, you know, you catch the recording in the archive later. All right, thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thanks, Victor.
All right, bye-bye. Good night, everybody.